My speaker today is Ray Ann France. She's coordinator of the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice in Portland. Clinical scientist and social activist with many years of experience working in human rights and international humanitarian law, humanitarian assistance, community development, political advocacy, and accompaniment, and immigrant legal defense in Latin America. Ray Ann.
Thanks, Rosie. Still getting over what Linda just wrote. Anybody else need a second? Thank you for sharing that, Linda. That really sets the tone for what we're all witnessing right now. My name is Ray Ann. I have been the coordinator with EMERGE, and EMERGE stands for the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, for almost 3 years, so I've seen a lot these last 3 years. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to share this morning with all of you, and I can feel some really good energy in here, so I appreciate the welcome and your smiles, your joys and your sorrows, and I enjoy walking together with you today. I just came here from Southeast Portland, so I got in my car and left my family, crossed the bridge, took the I-5 south, and drove past the ICE detention center on the way. Just occurred to me, I was driving here, so I'm going to go by there. ICE is, for those who don't know, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, it's the enforcement unit of the Department of Homeland Security's basically enforcing the Immigration and Nationality Act, as it stands today, immigration law. As I drove past that, every morning of every day, there's probably people in there right now. It's a processing center. It's where people go. It's right on McAdam. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. You drive past it all the time. You walk past it. You bike past it. The little egg, OHSU, goes over it, you know. It's by the, I think it's the Spaghetti Factory, something like that. Yeah, that's where they send people who have been detained, and they process them there, and within, at the maximum 12 hours, it's usually 2 or 4 hours, they're in a van up to the detention center in Tacoma. So, our lives are progressing. I came here to see you this morning, and I crossed the river and was thinking about faith and what moves me to this work, and a river came to mind because I feel faith for me is my conscience. It's that mysterious river in me that makes me want to do this kind of work. And I see that here too. I feel that I know that social justice is a big part of this community, a big part of this tradition. And that river of conscience and faith means that you don't drive by a place like that without feeling it. Something's not right in the continuum here. Somebody's suffering there. And every person who's there is a huge family that's missing that person. And that's what our work is. Our work is trying to change that. It's accompanying families, and it's above all trying to make change for social justice, so this doesn't happen anymore. And yeah, so the people who have been running from their home to this new home, when they do have a home here and a family, that they're safe and welcome in this community. This has been a really rough week for immigrants' rights. I'm just going to take the last week, because, you know, we could talk about the last few months or even the last year, but the last week has been difficult. Maybe you all heard that the National Guard might be put into use to round up immigrants, because we don't have enough ICE immigration customs enforcement agents to do the job of separating families efficiently enough. It's a possibility that could happen, that, you know, we could militarize ourselves further to basically tear apart our communities. That's a possibility. Raids and detentions have increased significantly. I mean, we're not making this up. Linda and I were just talking before the service. My husband, who is also an immigrant, said to me, wow, it's really happening. This is really, remember what we thought might happen, but maybe not wouldn't happen? We were talking about that. It's actually happening. And it's happening right now as we're all sitting here, even if it's Sunday, if it's Saturday. Usually it's early in the morning. Raids like they like it to happen before people are, you know, as they're on their way to work. You know, get them while they're in their homes or get them as soon as they get to work. It's already happening. Raise the attention significantly increasing. Daniel Ramirez, he's a Pacific Northwesterner just like us right now, is sitting in Tacoma detention. He's a DACA recipient, so he's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which Obama put into place to protect kids who were brought here by their parents. Well, he got picked up anyway, even though he has legal protection. So that happened this week here in Tigard. Three people were picked up as they waited for someone to pick them up after before work. Their families are now not knowing what to do. And in Sandy, a couple days ago in Sandy, Oregon, we got a call from somebody saying that her husband had been picked up as he was waiting for someone to pick him up for work too. Picked up by ICE officials. He is the husband. She is the mother of five U.S. citizen children. The youngest is four. They all, he's the sole breadwinner from the family. Now he sits in Tacoma. They don't know what to do. This is really bad news. Sorry, I'm drilled downer. That's the bad news this week. It's also been a really good week for faith-based organizing and is in our response to these things. And that's the power that we bring to this. Over 1,000 faith leaders signed a letter against Daniel Ramirez's detention. That's 1,000 faith leaders across the country are saying, hey, you can't just snatch people, especially people with protection, but we are against this. Our conscience, our moral dictates that we stand up against this sort of separation and injustice. Rapid response networks are being set up all over the place. I just spent all day yesterday working on that with our allies. We have a hotline set up people can call. We have strategies set up and in place to, when we find out someone's detained, we go, because the more people who show up, the more dissuasive it can be to these ICE agents. They're humans too. They don't like to feel pressure from the community, so that's a role that we play. And in Denver, the first First Unitarian Church at Denver just made the decision to open their doors to a woman off of her sanctuary. Her name is Jeanette Vizquerra. So she is now in sanctuary, Jeanette. She's in sanctuary meaning that she's going to solve her case with the protection of the sacred space. First Unitarian offered her this, but not just First Unitarian, 20 other churches and communities said, we're going to support First Unitarian to do this. So essentially all of the community of Denver, faith community, said, no, we're not going to let you take this woman. She's our friend. Those are good things. Those are good responses that come from faith and conscience. That's why I'm in this work. I'm very, very attracted to, I'm very motivated by the interfaith perspective. I joke that you could have interfaith whatever, interfaith movement for climate activism, interfaith, and there is such a thing, right? Interfaith movement for picking up the trash out on the outside today, you know, interfaith movement for fill in the blank, because it is such a powerful motivator and concept, because we all have this river, this current of faith in us. Maybe it doesn't have a name. It's not a religion. In my case, it's not. It's my conscience. It's that voice in me yelling at me, sometimes yelling, usually kind of pushing me along to do something. It's that notices that there's something not right about driving by this place where people are suffering. There's something I need to do about it. And I love that I talk with people from every faith imaginable who are all united in this commitment to work for immigrant justice, for our neighbors, for everybody, because it is everybody. I'm the granddaughter of an immigrant. I'm the daughter of an immigrant. I'm the granddaughter and the wife of an immigrant, I should say. But I'm also a friend to many, you know, and that's, I think, the most important part. That's what motivates me, too. Our organization was, I was asked to share a little bit about that today, too. We were founded for this reason, to gather people together, people of varying faith traditions, to work together for immigrant justice. And that's what we do. So in 2006, we were formed. This was part of a sort of a national uptake of organizing for faith-based organizing, I should say, sprung out of the New Sanctuary movement in the 1980s. But specifically around that time, there was the Del Monte raid here in Portland. Anybody raise your hand if you were living here? That was 2007. It was June 2007. That was a big motivator for a lot of organizations here in Portland, and specifically faith communities. The organizing that came out of that was powerful, and it formed our organization to this day. For years, our organization, which at the time was called the Oregon New Sanctuary Movement, accompanied families who were affected by the Del Monte raid, which was nationally famous. It was one of many raids that happened during 2007. That sort of spirit, that sort of energy, we're feeling it today. We're already feeling it again. We're already preparing for that. We already know we can. We learned a lot of lessons from the 2007 raids. Our organization changed our name, I guess 2013, to the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice to better reflect what the work is that we do. And it's not, sanctuary is an aspect. The sanctuary specifically means really accompaniment. It can mean anything you want it to mean, really. We accompany immigrants, we accompany their families, and we form relationships with each other and with our community based on this concern and what our conscience tells us. That's what we do at Emerge. Specifically, we have members. We have 22. We just had 22, our 22nd member join faith community membership, but also hundreds of individual volunteers, and again, many of who are not affiliated with any specific faith community, but are motivated by their conscience to take action. We have seen a huge rise in interest in this. So I'm not kidding. You know, if we call somebody to a meeting and expect about 10 people, there'll probably be about 50. Everything that everyone's doing right now for immigrants' rights is growing, but there's a very specific and strong rise in commitment and intensity around faith-based organizing. People want to do something, and we can help you do that, Emerge. That's actually why we exist. We can plug you into any number of ways that individuals and faith communities can take action for immigrant rights. So we had an assembly, a sanctuary assembly in January. That's a good example. I think we expected maybe 100, right? Not maybe, I don't know. About 500 people. They ran out of chairs, and they were hauling pews in from all over the church, you know, and office chairs swiveling around. You know, we ran out of space. The interest is explosive. We have monthly meetings at Emerge, so the second Tuesday of every month, and everyone's willing to join us. You know, we've been growing over the years, but, you know, we're actually at capacity. We're going to have to probably look for a bigger space or figure out what we're going to do, because people want to be in relationship with each other, and we want to work together, because we can't do it alone. We need to work together to make this change that's going to happen. Like First Unitarian right now offering sanctuary to Jeanette, they're not doing it by themselves. No way. They have a lot of support. It's the entire community, the faith community of Denver, that's offering sanctuary to this person and her family. That's the way it works. That's the way anything works, right? You know, people are hungry for this. We have work teams as well that concentrate on different aspects. There's advocacy, if you're more interested in that. We have an education component to our work, which educates about certain themes, immigrants' rights and social justice in general. We have special projects, a sanctuary cohort, which is a project that just started, which is developing 20 faith communities and their relationships to each other within their community and between communities, working towards accompaniment and immigrant justice and direct action. We have an immigrant support network. This is great. This is a list you can join and write letters, show up when people are detained, try to get them out of the detention center, accompany them to their court hearings. We have Faith Leader Lunch. We have a group of faith leaders who are specifically committed to this and introducing these things into their faith communities and providing leadership. Vigils, retreats, trainings. I'm not even going to bother going down the list. We have a lot of ways that people can plug in because people want to plug in. You know, I did when I came here, when I thought about moving back to this country. I'd been living abroad for about 12 years. And we decided we might try to live here. I thought, well, what could I do that would be akin to the human rights work I've been doing in Colombia and Peru? And immigrant rights for me is really the vanguard of so much in human rights in this country. and it intersects with a lot of the work that all of us are doing in all of our social justice issues. So this is a wonderful place to be involved and to be forming relationships. Again, as much as my conscience moves me, you know, there's nothing I can do by myself. And I have really found a home at Emerge, and I've made a lot of good friends, but I feel that the effect that we're having on the community and the visibility that we have now also raises our voice, our collective voice, with public officials. We speak for the faith community in Oregon that has a lot of weight behind it. There's a sort of, you know, moral, you know, inherent weight there that matters when you're talking to public officials in all levels. And I think that's something that we as people of faith and conscience are obligated to use. And I invite all of you to join our organization or join our activities, be part of us, be part of what we do, and share your creative ideas as well. And thank you. I thank you for inviting me today. You wanted me to leave some time for questions, I think, so I'm going to do that.
We have quite a long time for questions, actually.
Okay.
So as you raise your hand, we'll come around with a mic.
Thanks for coming and sharing your information about Emerge and the activities that are going on today. You mentioned that there are 22 faith organizations in Portland at this time that have become members of Emerge as congregations. Could you share some of who they are, particularly other UU congregations?
Yeah, there are no other UUs right now. There's a Unitarian. I'm sorry, First Unitarian. Sorry, First Unitarian. First Unitarian. That's it. Yeah. There is, boy, the list.
You have a list?
I can't remember. No. First Congregational, you see, they're the newest. 18th Avenue Peace House. Faith communities, but also there's organizations, faith-based organizations are members as well, like Jewish Voice for Peace. Ainsworth UCC, there's a lot of UCCs out there. There's Ainsworth UCC, Augustana Lutheran, of course, Bridgeport UCC, Fremont United Methodist, they're the only Methodist right now, a member church as well. I'm not going to read the whole list. Journey Koinonia, Catholic Community, Habit for the United Church of Christ. Yeah.
Unitarian Considering Christ. You have more Unitarians than you think.
Right.
But also, to follow on, we have some people in our congregation that attended that January meeting that you talked about, 500 people showing.
Can we have
a show of hands who attended that?
I'd love to say I recognize your face, but man, there were so many people there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming.
I understand that Governor Brown has said under no circumstances will the Oregon National Guard be used. Yes. Is that the bottom line then? I mean, does that mean the Oregon National Guard cannot be used by ICE?
From what I understand, it's a state decision, from what I understand. So, yeah, that would be. And I think we don't know if that's going to happen. The fact that it's even being floated is frightening. I think that's kind of, for me anyway, the alarm that's happening. But, yeah, I mean, from what I understand, and the state could say no. At least, yeah.
20 years ago, my family sponsored a Bosnian family's immigration, and they came back to visit last summer, and it was one of the best things we ever did. Now, my son, who was in Springfield, is asking, Mom, how can I sponsor an immigrant? So I wondered if your organization works with an organization that helps sponsor immigrants.
Well, you know, that's something that, especially during, definitely during, after the Vietnam War, you know, a lot of faith communities themselves, churches themselves were able to do that. And there's a lot of talk of that again. There's a lot of people who are asking that question, how could we do that again, especially with Syria over the last year or so. And as far as I know, I don't know any particular churches or faith communities in Portland or actually in Oregon who are doing that right now, but there are people who are supporting specific families who come in. So you can get in touch with a family, let's say, who comes in with their visas from Syria or from another country, and be their sponsor in the sense that help them establish themselves, provide them furnish a home, help with an apartment. One of our member congregations, Havara Shalom, it does that. They have three families now that they're sponsoring. That's one way to do it. We also have another project that we have emerged. It's called the Mi Casa Graduate Program. Children who come here, this is going to change this year possibly, but children who come by themselves, these are unaccompanied refugee minors who cross the border and fall into custody of the Border Patrol and have no legal guardian that people can determine, are sent to these very specific centers around the country. And then the U.S. government tries to ascertain who their legal guardian might be. We have one of those here in Portland. It's run by the Morrison Center. It's called Mi Casa. The Morrison Project receives children right now. There's usually on the average about 10 to 15 kids. If they don't find homes for those children, that means if they don't find a home with at least passable adult, you know, who might be related, then the child has nowhere to go. If that child turns 18, they're out on the streets. Well, actually, they have two choices. They can go to the detention center, because most of these youth also have valid visas that are being processed because they're refugee minors, or they can go to a shelter, homeless shelter, detention center. So what we've been able to do in two instances so far is find homes for those youth, no longer children officially, according to the law. That's a very intense thing to do, obviously, offer someone into your home, and these are children who are, by and large, very traumatized by their immigration experience, by the whatever it is that, whatever monster drove them out of the country, and also what happened to them once they got here. And all of those hooks are still in them. So these are kids who are essentially trafficked to get here, for the most part. So that's another way people could get involved. The families we have right now with those youth could use a lot of support as well. So I hope I answered your question a little bit. But I have a feeling we're going to hear more about that, more ideas about how to sponsor, specifically people who are suffering under the Muslim ban. No?
That would be helpful to have phone numbers and names and who to call.
Sure.
A little bit more specific information.
Website.
Yeah, you could go to our website. I know of specific students who are considering doing it, but I don't know of anybody doing it. But I would certainly be willing to be a resource for you. I think our website, which is imrj.org. And there is a page in there called Resources, which lists everything that's going on. Resources for faith communities, resources for the immigrant community, resources for advocacy, and resources specifically for faith community. I think that's probably what it would fall under. There's another question.
I was just going to ask what the website address was. imrj.org.
imirj.org, yeah.
Hi, and I've been tangentially learning a lot about immigration these past couple weeks after my friend's home was raided in the early morning by ICE and her husband was taken. And so they were worried about this, obviously, but they've been together for several years and got married shortly after Trump was elected. And yeah, so he's in the detention center right now. His name is Alejandro, and they just bought a house together that they've like torn down mostly inside.
Let me talk to two points here. Three. I'm very sorry to hear about your friend. And so I can feel what you're feeling. Yeah. I'm going to make a couple of recommendations. First of all, I want to remind everybody this, we have a hotline that we run. I'm one of the people who staff it. It's a hotline when you are witness to a raid or a detention. That would be you, no? It would be your friend, too. You can call this number. I'm going to give it to you. It's an 800 number, 888, I guess. 888. Say it again. Okay. 888-622-1510. This number is staffed 24 hours a day. Just yesterday we had a training for some new staff members. This is for you to call if you are an eyewitness, or you can connect it to an eyewitness of a detention or a raid. A raid is generally when there's more than one person. Raids happen pretty easily because what ICE officials do is when they come to detain one person, they'll just take whoever else is there too. Yeah. That's a raid. Sometimes they're planned ahead of time and we can act. Sometimes we can get tips that it's going to happen. But for the most part, it's like Morgan's friend. You know, she probably was in the early morning. They were probably getting the kids ready for school, and it's this very vulnerable moment. If you call that number, there's a couple things we can do. We want to verify that it's happening. We get the name, all the details of the situation. We can send people to a company. If it's too late, she needs accompaniment as well, your friend. But we can also follow up on his case. And so I would encourage her to call, because we're also documenting everything that's happening. Where did that happen? Was it tigered? Was it here? Was it there? So that we can actually establish and see a pattern that's forming in ICE. The idea is to denounce the situation to the authorities, that they're breaking up our community and destroying it. We can also put your friend's husband, if they don't already have a lawyer, we can give him a referral to people. If the person's in Tacoma, they need somebody there. These are resources that we have at Emerge ready to go. Back to our website, legal referrals. So this is resources for the immigrant community, resources. It's all there. And we're willing to help. So give me a call. Definitely.
My father was an immigrant. He poured across the border in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you love that verb? Poured. Terrible. Anyway. But pretty much as soon as he, and he immigrated legally, he did all the paperwork and became a citizen right away.
Mm.
And immediately, his whole life after that, drew a sharp distinction between legal and illegal immigration and was very hostile to illegal immigration. And I wonder if you could comment on that distinction or muddy gray area, or, because certainly people who get interviewed on Fox News make a very sharp distinction between the good kind and the bad kind, and those criminals.
Sure.
As my father did.
Sure. Yeah, and the preferred terminology, just to get it over with, is undocumented. So if you talk about somebody who has documentation or doesn't have documentation, because I think it's pretty fair to say that no human being is illegal by any situation. People use that term because it's incendiary, it's divisive. You say undocumented, you can disarm somebody. And it's the truth. This is a person who simply doesn't have the correct documentation. That said, it's important to remember, above all, that immigrant rights are human rights. It's just one of the many. It's a huge panorama of human rights we all enjoy. We have a right to safety, security, water. We have a right to education. We could list them all. I know you all know many of your rights. We also have a right to due process in this country. Due process, so super basic, fundamental basic thing of our existence here in this country, part of the Constitution, and that applies to every single person with or without documentation. So, if you want to tell me that somebody's bad because they don't have documentation, that's your decision. This is an undocumented person. If this is a person without documentation who committed a crime, they still deserve due process. That's all it is. We're not judging anybody, yes, good, yes, bad, because that road, trying to determine between good and bad immigrants, is a spiral, and it's not worth entering into, in the sense that what we're doing is providing people the opportunity to go to court, to serve the time, if they have committed a crime, to face the consequences and serve their time. That's all we're asking. That's what we ask for any human being across this entire planet, definitely here.
This is a technical question, Rand. Does ICE have to come with an arrest warrant?
Yes.
So once they have an arrest warrant and they're arresting one person,
mm-hmm.
to pick up anybody else in that same raid, they would need warrants for those two?
No.
They can simply pick people up without warrants?
I'll tell you what they do and what they can do. In order to enter into a home, in order to enter into this building even, this organization, they need to have a warrant. And the warrant has to specifically say on it, we're looking for this person or this thing. No, it's a warrant. If they're looking for a person, the person opens the door and lets them in, this is now a scene that can be picked and prodded through as they choose. would do a lot of know your rights training. Know your rights. Because you're right, if this person, if this Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer came into this building, and if anybody here did not have the legal documentation necessary, if my husband left his green card at home, he knows. Don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut. What country are you from? They'll just start asking people what country they're from. If you say you're from any place other than here, that's grounds to detain you. Already in the scene. They do it all the time. That's the raid. That's a raid. It's an informal raid. It's very effective, too, and it's happening all the time. More now than ever. But yeah, they need a warrant. So know your rights, ask for the warrant. If they don't have a warrant, they can't come in. And that's your right to deny them access to your home, to your office, to every place that is private. They can't just do as they wish. That's militarization. That's what we don't want. Yeah. Quite a lot of time for questions.
Yeah. Do you have a feeling for who's behind this action? Is it just the president, or is there a groundswell of people of certain types or certain positions that are demanding this?
Yeah. It's fear. I mean, people are afraid of other. People are afraid of that people might take something from them. You know, you can analyze this last election, but it's really not anything about, I call them DT. I think it has to do with what's been happening over the years. I mean, certain factions of the government have been really keen on deportation because it's a really easy way to look good and quickly like you're enforcing the law. I worked in immigration 20 years ago for a while, so it's the same. I don't feel anything different. I don't see anything different. I see more power right now, executive orders, which is what the new president is able to do real quickly, are really easy to do, and he does have a great deal of authority to get stuff done immediately, but as you guys have all witnessed, the Justice Department also has a great deal of authority to smack it down, so that's why our community protests and our actions matter, right? But I think that the responsibility falls on a safe fear because that political analysis, but I think fear of the economy, fear of people who are others, people who might take your jobs, people who might, and a lot of it could be considered myths, but some of them are real, some of them are happening. But I think that also separating people, this country has a long history of welcoming people, definitely. And so I think although we might be witnessing this tendency to separate families, you know, how we have ordered to separate to send people back to their countries to clean it up, you know, what they say in Latin America is social cleansing, right? But definitely we also have a responsibility to react and protect our communities from that. I do believe that.
I thought about 6.
I don't know if anybody saw the Sunday morning show on Channel 6 this morning. I never remember the name of it, but they were talking about this gentleman in Canada. And apparently in Canada, you can as an individual sponsor people. Mm-hmm. And he owns his own company, and he has spent over $1.5 million of his own dollars to sponsor 53 families, which equates to 100 and something people.
Right.
And because he owns his own company, he's not only able to sponsor them and take care of them for a year, but he's also able to employ them, which is what
right.
people want. They want to be normalized and get back to work and life and that sort of thing. So
right.
I think that's really great. And your point about the Del Monte raid, I was tutoring ESL at St. Anthony's Church in Tigard at the time, and we used to have probably 20, 25 people attend these classes on Tuesdays and Thursday nights. And right after the raid, we had 3. You know, it took a really, really long time for people to trust to be able to come back.
Yeah. And this is happening now.
It's a Catholic church, so you know the trust isn't built in. But that leads me to my question about the Hispanic folks that live in Washington County. You know, Tigard, Beaverton, out. You know, Washington County is kind of weird, and it goes out down to Forest Grove and whatnot. And much of the what you've been talking about so far has been kind of Portland-based. Is there something out in Washington County, out in the areas where you would think that the Hispanic population of possibly undocumented people would be larger than maybe in downtown Portland.
Oh, no, definitely. I would actually say it's happening in Portland. It's happening everywhere there are immigrant populations, specifically in Washington County. Yeah. Everywhere there's agricultural-based economy around here, everything. Definitely. I also wanted to just quickly to clarify something. There is something called a support, which is when you sponsor somebody who already has an application processing to a residency, or if they've been able to apply for residency for some reason, you can support them financially. That's another thing. Anybody could do that. It's true. It's an affidavit of support. This is something you could say, hey, this person needs to prove that if they didn't have any money, they wouldn't go on to public welfare. So you can step in and say, I'm supporting them. Any one of us can do that any time. I had to find someone to support my husband because I didn't have the money, you know. I mean, we just moved here, you know. So, I mean, I went trolling for someone to support my husband in theory. So, yeah, that's something. That's a real thing that could happen. And if people are willing to do that, great.
Yeah. There are two things that I always carry with me. One is my faith and belief, and the other is my cell phone.
Yeah.
So I have a new contact that I just put into my cell phone. His name is Detention ICE Raid. And in case you didn't get it before, 888-622-1510.
Right.
And the website, imirj.org.
Thank you. And the hotline is, we're staffing it. We're getting more people to staff it. It's been really busy. And I'm one of the people operated. One of the main things that we're getting are calls from people who, and again, I want to repeat this really quickly. If you are an eyewitness caller, you can hook us up to the eyewitness, because we're getting a lot of calls from people saying, so I saw there's something on Facebook, .. Or I saw on my friend's Facebook, you know. So I mean, the degrees of separation are, you know, it needs to be real. We need to verify it, and we'll send out teams to verify it happily.
You mentioned people being detained and letter writing. Can you possibly, through immigration, get an attorney through the American Civil Liberties Union to represent people who are being detained, and or possibly contact organizations like Amnesty International, who certainly, even though they also write letters to prisoners of conscience, could in these situations possibly do something to have letter writing for people being detained within this country?
Sure. The letter writing campaigns that we do through the Immigrant Support Network, and again, if you're interested, you can email me and I'll put you on the list. My email, throwing more out information out here, is portlandsanctuary, all one word, @gmail.com. This list is specific letters of support, and again, you're right, Amnesty becomes involved when we're, especially with detention centers, because they're demonstrating torture and unfair conditions that are happening in detention centers. These letters of support that we're writing are literally to get people out of there. So we can get 20 people more, 50 people to write a letter saying, you don't have to know this person, by the way. You don't have to know them. You just want your community to stay intact. We give you the model of the letter. We tell you things that we'd like you to mention. We tell you a story about the person in detention. We give as many letters as possible. These are handed to the judge at their trial, and the judge, who still can be swayed, because they still have discretion, they still can exercise prosecutorial discretion at these hearings, is swayed by the fact that so many community members have written letters and gone out of their way. And look, there's all of these churches and faith communities represented. That works too, whatever works. That's that letter writing campaign. And yes, we do have contact with ACLU, and we have a lot of, they have to be an immigration, every person has to have their own immigration lawyer. But I think where ACLU could definitely come in is when, and they already are coming in, is when we're establishing again this pattern of abuse. You know, that's when we get the big guns in, so to speak. Nonviolent, sorry. But this is a bit, it's important to establish what's happening first, you know, and document that each family, each individual needs their own immigration attorney to pursue their case. We accompany them. We are happy to accompany each individual in their case as best we can. Letter writing is one of them. Phone calls, visits, going out to Tacoma to be with them during their trial, during their hearing. That's huge. And the judge sees all these people there and says, what are all these people doing here? You must be okay. You must be part of the community. That's how we win it. And by the way, we win it a lot. We do. It's Portland Sanctuary, all one word, portlandsanctuary@gmail.com. Sorry about the Gmail. We're getting rid of that soon.
I think we have one more minute. Can you do it in a minute?
Just a comment. Someone was asking, is there one person or one group responsible for the increase in the ICE raids? I happened to have my TV on at the wrong time and got a glimpse of our latest pretender to the throne making a what was it, a rallying speech, the Smarrel logo, whatever that was about. But he was saying, I don't understand what everybody's griping about. That I've won the election, and this is what I've been promising for the last 3 or 4 months. So there is one person that is largely responsible for it. I've also seen a map, and where they're trying to get the National Guard engaged is the western and southwestern part of our country, up through Portland. And I've heard two things, and I'm not sure they're true. One is that Trump and his buddies have begun to back off on using the National Guard, and that our governor has said, no, not my National Guard.
Yes. Thank you, Rayanne.
Sir, thank you guys very much.